All right, folks, welcome back to the show. Mountain West Wire, MW Wire, talking hoops. Jeremy Moss here with Eli Betker at our new, sort of new home. We haven't talked hoops in a while. We're back.
Yeah, this is our first show on the new platform, so that's pretty exciting to get going.
If you haven't heard, if you're a first-time basketball listener, thank you. If you listened to our podcast before, our feed is still the same at Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn. We are now with collegefootballnews.com. Yeah, there's a football on there, but we talk hoops. It's okay. Don't worry. And it's backslash. Well, I won't say the backslash because at this moment there's a change of process possibly. But at the moment, I'll say it anyways. Collegefootballnews.com / MWC Wire. Same on Twitter, Mount West Wire on Facebook. All that fun stuff. You'll find us. There's just a few legalese items that just came our way about 10 minutes ago. But we're good. Go to collegefootballnews.com. You'll find our stuff. That's what we're going to do. Follow Betker _ Eli, myself, Jeremy Moss, and Spartans have a coach. We're talking coaching news tonight. We're talking, I guess, some early previews because we threw out questions and you guys delivered.
Yeah, so this is the first podcast we've recorded in quite a while where we have all 11 head coaching spots filled. So that's unusual, but here we are in August and they're finally all filled.
And we have you produced a coaching ranking list that created some stirs.
I sure did, yeah.
Apparently, people aren't a fan of Eric Musselman at number one, but we'll get to that later. Let's get to the coaching news. So here's the thing about coaching searches. It's crazy.
it's really bizarre. So I posted a list of, I think, 12 coaches the morning after Dave Wojcik resigned. And it looked like I was pretty excited because at least three or four of the names were actually rumored to some extent out of the 12. And for a coaching list, and that's the first one I've done, I don't think that's that bad because you're taking a stab at whoever might have interest with no known information. But that changed. It ended up none of the coaches that I had written down were true contenders in the end. It's Gene Prelow that's the new San Jose State head coach, which it's definitely not a name that I heard throughout the entire process, so that's odd, but we'll see what he does.
Yeah, like going through the coaching process, because there's like people tossed out Mike Davis, the former Indiana coach, like right away. There's some NBA assistants, I believe, I forget who it was, like Mark Spears of ESPN mentioned a few names, like two names. And then it was locked down for what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, at least.
Mm-hmm. Literally nothing came out. And then there is, should we mention the name that most people thought was the front runner? Is that okay
sure.
to talk
yeah.
about? So there is a big buzz between you and others. And you talk, and well, before that, you know a lot of people coaching college hoops. You've been chatting with coaches and whatnot. There is more interest in this job than you and I probably both thought.
Definitely.
And part of it with your coaching list that came out, it came out in July. Like, Wojcik resigned for family reasons to go to the East Coast with was his mother, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's right. She's not doing all that great. And July, it's like, who needs a coach in July? Nobody needs a coach in July. And so who are you looking for? Who's going to come in? It's going to be either, which ended up being correct with the assistant from Colorado, it's going to be either an assistant coach, a non-Division I coach, which there was that guy from, what, Southern Connecticut, who
yep.
was a finalist apparently. Somehow, I don't know, whatever. Or it's going to be like a retired coach, and that coach, which you named, and other people who I talked with as well, Trent Johnson was apparently the front runner for a while to be the guy. And I think you and I agree that would be pretty terrible had it been the case.
Yeah, I don't think it would have been wise for San Jose State to hire a coach that has already reached his peak as a head coach, as a guy that has already been a member of the SEC. It's odd because I don't understand the connection, but at one point Trent Johnson and David Patrick, who were either a former TCU coach or current TCU assistant, which Patrick is right now. Both of those two were tied to the job. I thought Patrick was going to be the one that would get the job. He has a good track record in terms of recruiting. He's got Ben Simmons on a roster when he was on LSU, Matthew Dellavedova to St. Mary's. And Aussie. He was a finalist. What's that?
The Aussie connection.
Yeah, the great Australian connection, which is definitely not the first time that would happen for the Mountain West, but that wasn't the case. So it was a strange search, and just like the New Mexico one, which was the last position that was filled for Mountain West Coaching Trees. We have another strange coaching search, but it ends up with what I would think is a better candidate than most imagine for looking for a coach in August, which is something that rarely happens, if ever.
Yeah, and also, Patrick, we were chatting to like 1 a.m., like, how do we write when you first mentioned, because no candidate name has came out at all. Mm-hmm. And so you got word, like, other people, like, well, here's a name that we know pretty sure, and you were pointing to the direction of his Twitter account. And like, oh, let's go take a peek. He literally followed everybody San Jose State related.
Yep.
And got followed back by players and coaches. And so it's like, we were debating, is he going to be the lead candidate? So like, nope, he's just a candidate. That's all I know. Because that's just conjecture if we're going to say he's the lead guy, because he's clearly a candidate for following. Nobody came out with that name except for you and the San Jose State Spear. That's it. Plus, mm-hmm. nobody else is on this coaching search because, well, it's August. It's Mountain West, even bigger picture. It's San Jose State, who's been terrible for a long time.
Right.
And seeing him follow these names, he's like, okay, it should be him. We had an article ready to go. It's like, you got word, announcements coming down Monday, press conference, potentially Friday. It was Friday night that we got word that it was the Colorado assistant, but it looked like it was Patrick the whole way. And then we had other, which would have made it fun. TCU is currently in Australia right now. It's like, is he getting on the plane? Is he not? And then John Rothstein swoops in, and my sources tell me it's the Colorado assistant coach. Like, dang it.
Yeah.
However, we were the first to have an article up and going, so good for that.
Yeah, there we go. And we got one of the candidates' names, so that's cool. But this was really bizarre. And when I saw the name pop up, I wasn't sure I was reading the correct thing, just because, I mean, I've heard at least 10, maybe up to 15 names throughout the last 4 weeks, because it was a long, long search. And Prelo's name did not appear once.
Yeah, we heard coaches from the Pac-12, the WAC, the assistant coaches that are interested.
Mm-hmm.
But it's your coach. So what do we know about – give us your little rundown of the new coach now. What's up with Prelo there? Like, what's his deal?
So he's a pretty well-respected assistant. He's been to a number of places. He's coming over from Colorado. He's also been at TCU, Iowa State, Marquette, Wichita State, Fordham. He's been around for 18 years as an assistant. This is his first head coaching job. And something that I looked up, which I thought was really strange, and I don't know if other schools match this, but San Jose State has hired 12 coaches in its program history. 11 of them are first-time head coaches. So only once has San Jose State ever hired a coach who has already had D1 head coaching experience, which is definitely interesting, and in some cases it hasn't worked out. Other cases have been slightly better, but they're taking the same stance here, hiring Prelo, who will be a first-time coach. He's gone to the NCAA tournament 5 times, NIT 5 times in 18 seasons, so that's definitely something that intrigues San Jose State, who hasn't reached the NCAA tournament in a couple decades.
Well, and also, he helped Colorado go back-to-back NCAA tournaments for the first time in 50 years. He actually helped them go to the from Big 12 to Pac-12 to actually be a pretty good contender in that conference. Because Colorado's never been not it's all him, but they have the former Air Force coach there. Correct. Is he still there, right? Tad Boyle? No.
Right, yeah. Boyle's still head coaching, yep.
But he wasn't the Air Force coach previously, was he? That was,
No, it wasn't.
Presvix or some interesting, whatever. It wasn't him. I remember the Air Force coach went there a while ago. But doing that at CU is a pretty big deal. They're not a good basketball program overall, historically, clearly, with the 2 back-to-back and 50-year appearance. He recruits well, and he's been on the West Coast, like being with St. Mary's, like that. All right, crap. Am I getting the guys mixed up now?
Yeah. He has, yeah.
Sorry, Wichita State. That's what I meant. TCU connection. You could have done a lot worse, right?
I think definitely.
Trent Johnson could have been worse. And then who is the Southern Connecticut coach? I don't even know who that is anymore. I forgot his name.
Yeah, Scott Burrell from Southern Connecticut. That was a really odd name that came up.
I looked into, like, he played pro hoops. He was it Quinnipiac for 1 or 2 years, and then he's been the head coach for a while at Southern Connecticut. But, like, I couldn't find any connection to the AD or anything out west. And so I don't. Part of the reason, again, like, your good stat of 11 coaches they've hired have ever been first time, it's a money issue as well. they don't have a ton of money. They were in the whack before. Mountain West doesn't make a ton of money, so they're not going to go out and get a big time coach or even a reasonably. They're not going to pull. Had this been in March or April, maybe they could have pulled the coach from UT Arlington, perhaps. But even then, I don't know. You're in Arlington. He's done great things there, but.
That's why I was really confused when I saw Mike Davis's name come up, because, like you said, this isn't a job that's at the current time going to bring in a lot of money on a contract. And Mike Davis led Indiana to, I believe, 2 Final Fours.
At least
so, one. Yeah, at least one. And so that's a guy that's a high-profile name. And, I mean, once you get in the position where you're coaching one of the top 5 largest programs in the country, it's hard to have that reality check of coaching a team like San Jose State. I don't mean to bash San Jose State, but that's just quite the drop off from where you once were in your career. Yeah. So I like this hire. I think it's a decent hire for sure.
Yeah, and the only thing with Davis, I think that would make sense, similar with like Mike Gottfried from North Carolina State. They've already made the money, and they don't need the money. They don't need like a big time paying job. Mm-hmm. However, San Jose State's a really hard job. It's not like you're going to. Let's say like a decent, like going to, I'll give an example of school I went to, Iona College. They've always been pretty good at basketball. Like say Mike Davis was was Indiana, and going to a school like Iona, or going to like a high level Missouri Valley, or even going to like even a, what's in the Mountain West comparable? New Mexico kind of, where it's still a pretty good job. They've had success, but not amazing success overall. I could see a guy like Mike Davis, like, yeah, I'll go to New Mexico. I know I can get talent. Or, like, go to Iona. You're near New York City. A lot of transfers go there. You have a good talent-rich area. San Jose State has talent in the Bay Area, but they've been awful. And so it's a hard gig. Going to New Mexico, not that it's an easy job, but there's people who are interested in playing out in New Mexico or playing at these upper-tier, not mid-major schools. And so I could see Davis doing that, but not going to San Jose State. That name was there just because, hey, a recent big-time coach got fired and nobody else is available.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the Paul Weir thing, this and Paul Weir are similar in that, like, except for New Mexico was an open book for their coaching search. Final Four, interviewing this guy, Paul Krebs here. The UTA coach, the Florida Gulf Coast coach was going to be considered. Then you get New Mexico State. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So – what do you want to go? Let's go to our coaching. Out of the 3 coaches that are new coming in this year, we have like Prelo. Jean Prelo. Jean, the Frenchman Prelo. I'll just call him the Frenchman. No, I'm kidding. You got 3 new coaches. You got him, Brian Dutcher at San Diego State, and then Paul Weir. In your rankings, we'll start with these guys. You put Weir 6, the highest amongst these other coaches. Why was Weir ahead of, say, of Dutcher, who's been with Steve Fisher forever?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I like what Weir brings to New Mexico. It's definitely a fresh face. He had solid success last year, and I think this is a guy that has definitely received a lot of attention for head coaching gigs, so it's nice that New Mexico is able to snag him. I think Brian Dutcher is a bit of a gamble because unlike Paul Weir, he's never coached a D1 game before, and he obviously has that connection with Steve Fisher for, since 1989, so they go way back, but it's assistant coach is way different than being a head coach. You have a lot of responsibility, and I can't put all my eggs in the same basket and go all in on a first-time head coach because it's risky. You never really know how it'll turn out. Maybe at the end of the season you could interchange the two. Obviously, New Mexico's not going to be great this year. San Diego State probably will. But that's where I have it right now. And that's based solely on experience, I'd say.
That makes sense. I was thinking about that, too. He's the only guy with head coaching experience. And so, even though Dutcher's been around for decades, it's different. Being number 2, number 1, that's a big – even though the seat's 6 inches away, it's a pretty big deal.
Yep.
So, overall on your list, and then you put good old Gene down there at the bottom at 10 just because.
Yeah, so I had a question asking why he was ahead of Pilipovic, which I think is a very legitimate question. Mm-hmm. I just think that the ceiling is definitely higher for Prelo right now than it is for Pilipovic, and that Air Force job is just so difficult trying to bring quality talent to a roster like Air Force. But I think Prelo is going to be a solid coach.
And we'll start the list. Like, Pilipovic, Bill Popovich is at the bottom, but they do bring back two guys who, because I did a quick article, they're playing Army at Madison Square Garden, which is a pretty big deal, that in December. And they're bringing back, I think, was it 8 guys who played 10 or more minutes, a couple double-digit scores. So they have talent or potential to be not as bad, but they always play a terrible schedule, which Craig Thompson hates. And the year they were even good, like really good, where they won the Mountain West, they lost in the first round of the Mountain West tournament, didn't get an NCAA tournament bid because they lost in the first round. So it's, and I was like, I don't remember what year that was. And I think it was back when TCU and Utah and BYU were still in the conference, when it was a much better basketball conference, and they actually won the freaking Mountain West. But it's just hard to win. And so if he's ever going to get much higher, he's not going to be at Air Force for much longer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with Utah State, Duryea taking over for Morrill, not, it's like I mentioned, the conference uptick, Big West, WAC, Mountain West. But I think part of with that is that obviously it's more tougher schedule. And, you know, Stu Morrill schedules, man, his schedule's terrible. And Duryea's trying to change that. And, low getting, here's the thing, my comparison between Duryea and Dutcher, it's that could be Dutcher's future, but getting talent to San Diego compared to Logan, Utah, come on, not a competition by any means, because I've been to Logan in March and December, not a fun place to be.
Yeah, there's a lot of geographical issues with how recruiting goes, and it's the same thing for Laramie and Wyoming, because seemingly no one has much many good things to say about that, or Air Force, or even San Jose, because the players that come from the Bay Area, they immediately draw attention from Cal and San Diego State and UCLA and other programs like that.
Stanford, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
A lot more schools. And then, like, East Wyoming, you have Allen Edwards, 7. And one good thing we should touch on as well, the new NCAA rule about the selection committee. They are, it's a, what is it, increasing road games? Is that correct? Putting more emphasis on road games?
Yeah, so the way that the team sheets were previously set up is, like many of us college basketball followers have heard so many times over the last however many years, is you got your top 50 wins, you have 51 through 100 wins, 101 to 200, and 201 plus. And so now they've adjusted it, and definitely haven't memorized it or will anytime soon. But it weighs your victories and your losses based on locations of games, which I think is a very good inclusion on the team sheets, because now you don't weight a victory over, say, the 25th ranked team on the road the same as you would if you beat the 25th ranked team at home, which is a very, it's a big distinction, because it's much more challenging to win on the road than it is at home or at a neutral site. So that's adjusted a lot, and I think it impacts conferences like Mount West or Big West or West Coast Conference, because they obviously play far more games on the road than the power conferences do. So it should help out the Mountain West, and it's not like this team or this conference becomes a multi-bid league overnight because of this, but it's a small step towards ensuring that the top 68 teams are in the tournament every year. So I think it's definitely a good change by the selection committee.
And like Wyoming, they always complain about it because it's hard to get home games. You're not going to get even Colorado playing Wyoming, you're not going to get them at Laramie usually. Or playing whatever decent above average team here like Utah or Cal or Oregon State coming to Laramie's tough. Like, look at Colorado State. They played Kansas State at the Pepsi Center. They couldn't get them at home. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think this will be a thing where Wyoming scheduled – what did they schedule recently during the offseason? Was it a – maybe it was – maybe I'm thinking Oregon State. Was it a home-and-home with Oregon State they just recently scheduled, I believe?
Yeah, they'll be playing at Oregon State on the second game of the season this year.
And think, yeah, there's a home-and-home with a couple, which is good. I don't think this is going to make a change where, oh, Wyoming's going to only go out and schedule, say – Wichita State, Butler, Texas Tech, or Florida, you know what I mean? Teams like that, or Big East teams, just because it's a road game. They still want people at home because you want to make money, you want to get playing for your home crowd, get a good upset, because the home court advantage in the Mountain West is one of the best, and out of the country, you probably know better than me while your research are doing all these different items, but as we've seen the past couple of years, the Mountain West home schedule, like Fresno State's beating good teams at home. They beat San Diego State at home last year, correct? San Jose State's beating people at home.
I want to say that the Mountain West, and I wrote this somewhere on some article, maybe it was on the article about the same subject, that the Mountain West is the only conference to rank in the top 10 in home win conference percentage over the last maybe 4 or 5 years. So that's impressive, and that's – or no, sorry, they were one of the two conferences. I don't remember what the other one was. But, yeah, this conference is known for having very passionate home crowds and it definitely gives the home teams a boost. So it's important to win games on the road when you can to help your team sheet come Selection Sunday.
So that's a big deal because Mountain West, they're not going to get – they're getting 2-for-1. I don't see why they don't get more 2-for-1s occasionally. And there's guys like who cover the – beat writers like, well, they want home games. I'm like, yeah, but you could occasionally do 2-for-1s or do like home neutral every now and then. But it's gonna be a big deal, like when you see, because honestly, UNLV and San Diego State only teams that can get quality teams at home. Because UNLV is getting Arizona this year. They played Duke at T-Mobile, which is close enough last year. They can get teams to come to town. But if you're Boise State, who has to go to Wisconsin to play, or for Utah State, who has to go to BYU or Utah or play at Salt Lake City instead. Or San Jose State, so we kind of jumped off topic there, but that's not a big deal. It's okay. That's what we do, right?
Yeah, we've done it before. It's not the first time.
And so it's a good thing I want to touch on when we mention Wyoming because they can't get home games. So do you think it's going to be a big impact? Like, how would you – like, you know, we noted the stat sheet. And is this taking place this year? Is that right?
Yes, it's taking place this year. And the other good news is that there are rumors. I don't know how – How likely it is, but yes, the RPI should be going away as early as the 2018 season. So it'll still be in place for this year, but after this season is complete, we should see, I know Matt Norlander has definitely talked about this a handful of times, it should be a composite ranking which takes KenPom and Massey and Sagarin and all these advanced stats that are a much better indication of team quality than the outdated RPI. So that's another it definitely helps out the Mountain West, all these changes that are happening. It's just a committee trying to ensure that their tournament brackets are as good as they can be.
Yeah, and like there'll be some, maybe they'll be more willing to get some high profile games on the road, but I don't think you'll see New Mexico going out and playing UCLA on the road, Texas and Duke or something, you know what I mean? Or doing what Utah Valley's doing this year. They're going back-to-back nights at Kentucky, at Duke.
Oh, yeah, I saw you mention that Utah Valley schedule. That one was tough.
Yeah, there. Mark Pope, I love the coach, but man. And super early, odd pick, UVU, they're going to be a team to watch. I'm going right now. They're playing at BYU. They're hosting BYU. I'm going to be at that game. That'll be awesome to see. So let's move on. Paul Ware, 6. We discussed him a bit. Number 5. People are kind of upset a little bit. Marvin Menzies at 5. I think you put him there partly because UNLV had mass exodus and you don't really know what he can do yet. And they were awful in his first year. And so there's that too.
Yeah, I think 5 is pretty fair. There was probably an argument to put him ahead of Rodney Terry, who's number 4 on this list. The recruiting class that he was able to bring in this offseason is huge. But now it's up to Menzies to turn a recruiting class into victories, which is something that we'll see. Obviously, he did great things at Mexico State, but the stage is a little bit bigger in the Mountain West. UNLV is definitely a larger program, definitely a bigger program profile. So, yeah, Menzies number 5 for now, but that could definitely change.
All right, then we had a question. We'll get to one of the questions now about Jordan Johnson at UNLV because he's coming in from Milwaukee. Do you have any quick thoughts on him about what to expect?
Yeah, I think the question regarded what his impact is on this season, and I would probably say he's the most important player on this team. So he's sat out last season. He's a senior point guard this year, so he'll definitely be a starter. He was second in the country in assists per game in the 2016 season. A fantastic distributor, which is something that this team will really like, especially if they play up-tempo. And I also looked at it in this sense, and that's that Milwaukee ranked 261st in tempo that final season that Jordan Johnson was there. And last year, UNLV was almost 100 ranks higher than that. So definitely a possibility that Jordan Johnson could lead the entire nation in assists this next year. Definitely has a lot of offensive scores on that team. So I think he's going to be huge for the Rebels.
I also think Brandon McCoy, because he was in that U19 national team and doing pretty good. as well. Like, he was one of the most, I think, before the heading into the semis or something, because the U.S. got third, he was like the most efficient offensive player in the whole tournament or something.
Yeah, I did see that.
Something along those lines. One of the most efficient offensive players. And they kind of split up minutes there where you'll play, basically everybody plays at least 10 minutes or so, and he played about, what, 15 to 20, maybe more at times. But with Coach Calipari there coaching everybody, kind of basically split up playing time, see what groups are doing good. So I think he's the only top 100 recruit of the class to go to a non-power conference as well, McCoy, and to UNLV. And so you got Ronnie Terry. Are you as high in them as some people are? There's a few saying they could win the conference this year.
No, I'm definitely not. And a lot of people, I haven't seen anyone put Fresno State lower than I have. And that's because Fresno State's front court isn't as deep as I'd like it to be. And almost every other team in this conference bolstered their front court to some extent this offseason. And Fresno State has like 2-3 legitimate bodies that can play there every night. So that's my main concern. Their backcourt is awesome, but that front court is definitely a big question mark.
All right, so then let's wrap this up, then we get some of our questions here, because we don't need to go extremely long in this first basketball show back, even though we're about 30 minutes now. Actually, let's do this real quick. Let's take a quick timeout. I need to go get a sip of my Coke Zero or something here before they run out and get that Coke Sugar Zero, whatever it's called. I'll get a sip of that, and we'll be back in just a second here. All right, so let's get back to our next part of the schedule here of the coaches countdown. I'll tell you that Coke Zero Vanilla, very good, guys. Excellent. You should try some.
Product placement right there on the MWC Wire podcast.
Not a show sponsor, but we do have plenty of good sponsors if you want to check that out. Texture, they're pretty good too, I heard. So listen to we'll get to stuff there, but we want to give a little, make sure it's in the middle where we get a little 60-second break. So hope you guys listen to that very closely, because we appreciate that. Next on the list, though, we got Terry. Then we got Larry Eustachy. A couple things with them. Let's kind of go to the questions that we have with them as well. Eustachy and Rice, that's a close call for me as well. But I think, I don't know, I may have put Eustachy second just because they played like nobody last year. They had like five players essentially on the team. And he did good things. Like they came out of nowhere, kind of exceeded the expectations. But it's kind of splitting hairs from what Rice and Eustachy can do, because neither school's been a great basketball program the past decade or two. They've all, especially Boise. CSU's had their run here or there, but Eustachy at three, that's, I'm fine with it. And from what he did last year, that's my only reason I'd stick him at two. But three's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think those two are interchangeable. I went with Rice at number two because their basketball program was next to nothing before Rice came in, and now he's turned them into almost a guaranteed 20-win team every season. I have no problem with people putting Eustachy in number two, though. That's definitely a legitimate argument right there.
So let's go to the roster. We had some recent news with Rams with Che Bobb, unfortunately. Is he still on the team? Because he missed a it went from he had a DUI or something a year ago. He's arrested. But I guess he didn't appear in his court appearance recently about probation. And now there's issues because of that.
And that's another chapter to the book of Che Bobb, because this is one of the three players that was suspended this past season. All JUCO transfers that missed the last 15 or so games, which was the reason why Colorado State had to operate on such a short rotation. He was one of those guys that was suspended due to academics.
Yeah, officially he was failed to appear for a June 23rd court appearance about his probation. It's like, what's...
Yeah.
You already got in trouble for something pretty serious. All you gotta do, I don't know what the hearing is for, I got a pop-up ad so I can't read into it and I forget what it said before, but he's gotta show up. It's basically, I believe, if I'm correct on this, it's basically like one of those things, oh, you gotta meet with your, something with your parole or probation officer. You just show up. He was in jail for a couple hours back in June, $150 bond, and he was arrested back in August last year for a DUI. He got a misdemeanor offense, pled guilty to a month later. So this is basically, and also suspend license driving, which, come on. And night without headlights on. Come on, really? That was dismissed, but still. But it's like, just all you got to do is show up, because you're not getting in any worse trouble by not showing up. I mean, by showing up. This is what you're supposed to do. And so...
What you just read right there is probably enough, if I were running the show, to kick someone off the team. I mean, that's quite the list that you had right there. So we'll see what happens. I don't know if he's kicked off the team yet, but if he's not, I'd be pretty surprised, because that was quite the laundry list of legal issues he has going on right now.
Yeah, because it was a suspicion of DUI, either drugs or alcohol, which probably means his I can't guarantee, but the reason why it's worded this way, suspicion, because he probably declined a breathalyzer test, which means you're automatically guilty of something, because if you decline that, and it's harder to test if you had pills or something, or drugs, because unless you can visibly tell, there is not like a breathalyzer test if you're taking whatever pain pills or illicit drugs, and then like you put the license and no lights on, it's like, come on. And then Eustacey mentioned, we've taken this matter very seriously and I've been monitoring his progress towards resolving this issue, which occurred last summer. We're disappointed in his action to have counseled him on the program standards and expectations. We were aware of the warrant issued yesterday, and he's handling the outstanding issues associated with that. So, it's like, I don't, what do you have better to do? Like, what happened? It's not like I just forgot.
I don't know. It's just a lack of care or awareness or something like that. Yeah, responsibility, exactly. And that's something that, as far as his track record goes, is not something he has a whole lot of. So I'd probably be surprised if he appears in the game for the Rams next season.
Yeah, and it's a big enough deal where you get arrested for. It's not like you're not showing up and like a warrant. It's like there's – I don't – never had that legal issues myself, but it's a big enough issue where you get arrested for not showing up. It's not like, oh, hey, you missed your appointment. Let's reschedule. Even if you don't, right. don't call. But it's a big enough deal where it's DUI last year, part of your probation, the reason you got a lesser sentence because you agreed to terms A, B, and C, and then you failed this one. So, and then speaking of the rest of the roster, they had a lot of guys there – missing this year. They had a couple guys like Clavel's in the NBA with the Mavericks, a couple guys in the summer league. They had a couple guys transfer as well. So one of the questions was like, what are your early thoughts on the roster? I know it's super early, but do you have any indication of what it could be?
As far as starting lineup, I'm not entirely sure. I know that Colorado State's in the Bahamas right now, so we'll know a lot more about what their roster looks like in a few days. But yeah, they've got a really good backcourt. They have a ton of guys that are going to be legitimate players this season. A couple of JUCO guys. I know Alonzo Tyson and Deion James are both on the JUCO top 100. I want to say Tyson is in the top 5, so that's a very legitimate player there at a power forward position. Obviously, losing Clavel and Amagbo is huge, because that's at least 25 points a night that you won't retain this season. So we'll definitely see some fresh faces. But I don't think this team's going to be awful by any means. They're far too talented to be that.
Is there any players coming in? Like, here's the exact question. They want to update in the roster. They're down to 7 last year and had grads and transfers. So just as JUCO guys coming in, and depending on what Shea Bob, if he's going to play or not, that's a big deal as well.
Yeah, it definitely won't be a 6-man rotation this year. And it's the same thing with Nevada. Both of these teams might not be as star-oriented as they were last year, but they're much deeper, so that's definitely something, and fatigue won't set in nearly as quickly as it did last year, though both teams handled it very well, and that's why they met in the championship game. But this team should be at least 8 or 9 players deep, so that's a benefit for Eustacey.
All right, so we got to Leon Rice. They almost lost. They did lose Nick Duncan, unfortunately. He's gone forever.
Man, I'll have to watch some Nick Duncan highlights tonight.
Is he going to join Hugh Greenwood and play Australian rules football or something? Or Alex?
Oh, Kirk? Gosh. Can you imagine?
That would be great. No, it's Kirk, because I think – wasn't Greenwood signed a deal recently with some Australian league, NBL, I believe?
He did, and he's been playing really well from what I've seen, so that's cool.
But they do have Chandler Hutchinson back. That's a big – shoot. Yes, he's back, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, he declared – sorry, basketball. I'm trying to think of all these names. He did declare but came back. So that's a big deal. And he's number 2. That's fine. Number 1, Musselman. Not a shock at all, because if you want to think of bad basketball programs, outside of having when Trent Johnson was younger and a good coach with Nevada, they've been pretty bad between Johnson until now. And people who complain, somebody complained on Twitter, well, he just brings in transfers. What's he going to do? He can't recruit players or keep his coaches. Well, A, if you can't keep your coaches, you're doing a good thing because you're winning and people want your coaches. And who cares how you're getting players, right? He's been there 2 years and had to do what he could to fill out a freaking roster.
Yeah, and the thing that is huge is he's bringing in players like the Martin twins and Kendall Stevens from Purdue. These are already established players that can be immediate producers, and that you never really know with freshmen, because even if you have 4-star freshmen, 3-star freshmen, some just don't pan out. And if you already have established guys that have played 50, 60 games at the collegiate level, then that definitely is a big boon for your roster. So I don't have any issue with what Musselman's doing. He's definitely changing college basketball in the process by bringing in all these transfers and assembling some fantastic rosters in the process.
And he turned down the Cal jobs. That's good.
Yeah.
So we have another question here really quick. I'm going to read exactly what it is from, the Big Fish. I would read your Twitter. I will read their Twitter handle, because I guarantee this is a random generator Twitter handle. Starts off good. Randy Me. So Randy M-I. Then it goes crazy. 76. Is this his phone number? 767-8576. Is that your social?
We have our first MWC Wire call-in, so that's pretty bold. Good for him.
Is that what that is? Is that your social or something? I don't know. Birthday or something? I don't know. But they ask, who is your favorite in the Mountain West? I don't know if it's a joke question, because they say UNLV or UNR. Clearly Nevada.
I wonder if he lives in Nevada. But yeah, it's definitely Nevada. It's not UNLV right now. I don't know how often teams go from worst to first, but
they are a fifth grade teacher in Las Vegas, so.
Okay, well, there you go. So yeah, it's definitely Nevada. I don't think any other team as of right now is anywhere close.
No, and then a few other questions we have here. I'm gonna address this even though I did on Twitter. You have Noah Robotham. He's out this year. He's a transfer. He's eligible 2018, so he's not playing this year, folks. Sorry. Had two questions on him. Next question. You did more research on this than me, so I'm going to defer to you. Who's the best guy, 6'9 or big or taller? Basically, who are the top three big guys in the conference? Could I just chime in and say, is Brandon McCoy one of your top three?
Yeah, that's right. He's number one. So he's at 7 foot. That's a 5-star. That's a pretty easy pick. I also have Ryan Wehlich from San Jose State, who averaged 13 points per game last year as an underclassman, so expect him to make a significant leap this year. And also Alan Herndon from Wyoming. This is a guy that averaged he was in the top 10 for minutes, rebounds, and blocks per game. He'll be a senior this year. So those are three solid big men to watch out for this upcoming season.
I got a few more questions here. I'm just kind of scroll through. Again, thank you for the questions, because we usually ask for questions and get nothing. So I'm guessing we're a hoops podcast, not mostly or not. But okay, here's another couple. There's a few more here. Crap, I had a couple. There's one about expansion, but there's a funny one too we can get to as well. I think that was the last legitimate question. Oh no, here's what it is. Fresno State's been bringing in a lot of transfers. He talked about Texas A&M forward Eric Vila coming in. Is he eligible at the moment?
He's not. He has to sit out this season. He'll have 3 years of eligibility. He was incredibly inefficient last year, so hopefully he can work on that. It's a big body for Fresno, which is something that they've lacked the last few years, so it's good for them to get a power forward / center, and we'll see what he does. But yeah, he'll be sitting out this year.
Yeah, he's a 6'11 guy, played at Texas A&M out of Spain, and he played what looks like 12 minutes last year per game. Tried to shoot three-pointers, not very good, 22%.
Yeesh. Yeah.
A couple rebounds a game. Yeah, he basically mop-up duty for a average, at best, Texas A&M basketball team. There's two questions. One's sort of silly. I'd say they both are. Somebody had a quick question about – they got it right under the wire about the Mountain West passed up on Wichita State. Any potential candidates for expansion? They put Grand Canyon, but I'm assuming they mean Grand Canyon.
Yeah, we've both agreed on this for quite some time.
Yeah, St. Mary's and Gonzaga. There's no point in Gonzaga leaving, even though that would be – if they could get them, yes. But I mentioned during Mountain West Football Media Days, Craig Thompson needs to promote the league better. Instead of just saying him versus the American in football, saying, well, our record is what it is, but Joe Fan from Texas and Florida and Oklahoma and Iowa are going to look up Boise State's or Colorado State's football record against Team X or B. It doesn't matter. So you got to get the wins. And we still wish Wichita State would have came. That would have been great. I still say Grand Canyon has the potential. Market size is decent, even though eyeballs aren't really there in Phoenix. They have an amazing gym. That's the only game in town for that school. They don't have football. And so if they could swing Grand Canyon, they should do it. So, but officially, there's nothing going on about that.
Yeah, I think Craig Thompson said something like, we have no interest in expanding in the immediate future. So if Grand Canyon does come over, it's not going to be for quite a while.
Yeah, basically, I think his thing was run. It's not like it was on the agenda past couple of years where it's always something. It's basically like it's there. It's like, well, listen, it's there, but it's not like, okay, we're topic X. We're talking about what team we want to bring in or hoping not to lose Colorado State to the Big 12 or something. And finally, the most important question here. Did you see this one, Eli?
Horse?
Yeah.
Yep.
Have you ever played basketball on a – what's your highest level basketball playing, I guess?
I've been playing my entire life, but as far as playing on a team within a school, middle school. But, I mean, I've played throughout high school. I still play about – I try to play at least half hour, 45 minutes a day. So I've put my time in.
Okay, so Horse, what type of player are you? Because I'm 6'4". You're just shorter than me, so you're probably guard play, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and I'm not good at one-on-one because I don't have any, like, isolation fancy moves. Just spot-up shooter, just give me the ball at the three-point line and I'll fire away.
So what would be your go-to shot in Horse, then?
I like the left corner for sure. I can beat people at Horse, but one-on-one is tough because usually the person I'm playing is taller than me or has fancy moves. So
see, I would dominate one-on-one because I'm reasonably tall. And so playing on a team is okay, but I'm like, I just back you in and block your shot every time.
you would block me all the time.
That's all I do. I'm like, I'm going to post you every teacher one-on-one. But Horse, I don't have any like trick shot. I don't know. It's like I haven't played Horse in forever, so it's hard to think of what I would actually do. Maybe try the sky hook, but I'm not very good at the sky hook. I would probably do some sort of shot where it's like behind the backboard over the top because it's so unique. Or I'd call like a bank shot from some weird angle just because. But I would say you play more than I do currently, so I'd say you beat me. I don't know who else plays basketball, so on our who writes for us, so let us
know. Does Matt play any basketball?
I don't know. He plays Overwatch quite a bit, I believe.
I think Justin's pretty athletic.
He might be. I know he's a he coached at least part of his job. I think he's like a PE teacher of some sort in either junior high or something. I forget. But, So there's some athletic there. You got to do something. You got to know what you're doing to coach kids, right?
Yeah. Well, someday we need to assemble an MWC Wire horse contest.
Okay. Maybe we'll do videos of here, make this shot. I'm at this marker on the court. Your turn. Pass the video along or something.
Yeah. We'll put some videos together.
Maybe we should do that. That's a pretty good idea. We haven't made videos yet, so maybe that's something we should do.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, so because apparently everybody likes video these days, I guess. But any other basketball news we need to touch on since we went through our top list, coaching list you made, the new hire out in San Jose State. We got some teams. Utah State's going to Europe, I believe, as we speak. You said the Rams are out in the Bahamas.
UNLV released their schedule, and it's pretty awful. It's as bad as it's ever been over the last 15 years. But at the same time, it's a chance for the team to gel and put up some wins, which is something that they've been pretty short of the last couple of years. But it's an awful schedule. I would not pay much money to go see Prairie View A&M.
They got Shiny Key Arizona coming to town. That's about it.
Yeah, and that they'll probably be the number one team in the country, so that might not be all that interesting after all.
Got a few schedules out. Like I think New Mexico is out a little bit. You have, like I mentioned, Air Force playing Army at Madison Square Garden. That's pretty cool to be out there. We'll get to more
schedules. Oh, there's one other big news tidbit that came out yesterday, and that's that Ohio State transferred Jaquan Lyle transferred to New Mexico.
That's right.
So that's significant. This is a guy that averaged 11 points and 5 assists per game at a Big Ten school, which is very impressive. The downside, though, is that Lyle has quite the history in terms of off-the-court issues, which is probably why the book was open for him to transfer to the Lobos. He was arrested in May, public intoxication, criminal mischief, disorderly conduct, and that's after he quit the team. So might have a bit of a head case on the roster, but it is the guy that's going to produce if he's on the court. He'll sit out this season. He'll have 2 years of eligibility left, and hopefully he'll be able to produce for the Lobos for a couple seasons.
All right, I think that's our show for tonight. Off-season hoop show, pretty good. Our first one at collegefootballnews.com, so check us out there. Like our stuff, Facebook, Twitter. Just search Mountain West Wire. You'll find us. Disregard what I said at the beginning of the show of maybe changes. We're good to go. Got the email saying we're fine for our social media accounts. We may have a particular new URL soon because some dummy bought one out from the underneath from us the day we're supposed to buy it. So thanks to that Canadian jerk. That's all I know. You're in Toronto. I'm going to find you one day and see what we can do. But that's our show for tonight. We are going to start pretty soon our basketball weekly previews. Do you have a specific order you want to go in, or should we just leave it up to people and vote on it?
I think we should do what we do with the football and just leave it up to the people.
All right, we'll probably start these. Probably September, I'm believing, we'll start. So we'll probably bank a few going up next couple weeks, but start looking for these in middle of September. Excuse me, maybe early September. We'll see if we'll do one or two a week, but check those out.
Follow you. Also, the top 25 list.
Oh, yeah, top 25 players list. That will start in mid-September as well to go through about Halloween. So if you want to be part of that, let us know. But if you really want to be part of that, head over to our Patreon accounts. Yes, shameless plug again here. Patreon.com/MWCWire. If you contribute, what is it, $3 a month for all of our work? Our work's always free. Like at College Football News, it's always free. Don't worry about it. But if you want to help support the podcast, get, like me and Matt say, burrito money or something, help us out. If you do, great. If not, read our stuff, listen to podcasts. That's good as well. But if you want to be part of the top 25 process and get your vote counted, if you're a contributor at Patreon for $3 a month, you will be on the list. We'll give you a shout out in the podcast and stuff as well and a few other cool things we're doing. But that's one way if you want your vote heard. And our other stuff we'll do, like other power polls and stuff, go sign up there. And, yeah, check out our stuff. So that's what we want to hear from everybody else. And we will start in a couple weeks talking hoops. This feed as well, really quick so everybody's aware. If you subscribe to the feed, we appreciate it. Give us a review on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever other platform we're on, TuneIn. Tell a couple friends. That's pretty cool, right? Tell your best friend. You want to be smart, right? So listen.
Oh, yeah.
Listen to Eli, at least. Me, I don't know. But
you don't give yourself enough credit. We do just fine.
We do just fine. Basketball, I know where my limit's at, and I get my work done, but you are the more expert in hoops. But, yeah, just give us a follow. Listen, it's great. That's why we had a little ad in the middle of the show, just because, to help us out. But we got hoops is coming up here, and I'm excited. I want a minimum two bid conference league this year. Has to be the minimum. And I want what's another fun goal we could have? I want UNLV to be better because the league's better when the Rebels are better, and it's fun to talk about.
Definitely, yeah. And I like those two goals.
And third, what's your Heat Check website? Because I forget at the moment.
Yeah, heatcheckcbb.com. So Heat and then Check and CBB, like college basketball.
You're doing a lot of analytical stuff over there. Like you've done schedule, like recruiting for like what state recruits or what school recruits each state the most. Is that one of your most recent ones?
Yeah, I have that one. Yeah, and one on transfers.
Yeah, check it out. There's all like, it's not an epidemic. Transfers are everywhere. Don't get too caught up in hearing people saying there's a transfer epidemic. There are 351 Division I teams, I believe. So, and how many transfers were there? 700, I believe. Is that about right?
This year, I think the last time I checked, there were 780, and I know that 2 years ago, I think there was 850.
That's barely two per school. That's not that many.
Yeah, North Carolina is the only team that has not had a player transfer out of its program over the last 6 years. All the other 350 teams have, so no one's immune.
Yeah, it's like two per school, one or two per school. Come on, that's not that many. And there's a million reasons people transfer. Like we talked about the Ohio State guy getting kicked off the team. Okay, that sucks. Transfer. There's grad transfers. The only thing I have an issue with, not to go on to a new topic, it kind of stinks if you are a guy from a low major conference like you're playing in the Big Sky or the SoCon or the MEAC, and you want to try your hand at a higher conference for 1 year. I don't like that much, but again, it still happens. Like if a guy wants to prove himself going from Texas State to Cal, or so, you know, I mean, something, a big jump like that, or going from Texas Prairie View A&M going to University of Texas or Texas Tech. That's fine, but I think it kind of stinks for those smaller schools. You lose your best player, but it happens still. That's the only area it's like, I'm like, come on, that, finish out your career there. But I get it, too. You want an opportunity to have a pro career, hopefully, in basketball. So.
Yeah, it's all about recognition. So it is what it is. I don't have a problem with it. It's just 18 to 20-year-olds that want to go where they want to go.
Let me ask you one question, since we're on the topic, and it'll probably never come up again for a while. I was debating, because this has happened in football too, to a less degree for more kind of grad transfers. Would you be in favor of, say, because there's transfers where I need the hardship because my family comes here, or there's the deal within the Mountain West. Utah State had a tight end going to Joe Fiowaku to BYU. Coach Wells is blocking the transfer to not allow him to play right away or be on scholarship. How would you feel, because coaches have all the leverage here, of course. They can leave whenever they want and get a new job. How would you feel if a player were to be able to have, say, one transfer no matter what through their career, but a coach can't block it? So say you still have 5 years to play four, but say player A doesn't like a situation at Colorado State, they're going to transfer and go to Colorado or go to Gonzaga, and there's no penalty, but they only get one of those in their career.
I don't know if this is exactly what you're getting at, but if a coach is fired, resigns, or goes to another school, and players want to transfer, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that they have to sit out a year because it's something that was completely out of their hands and unexpected. So, like, say for San Jose State, they just made their coaching change. If I don't know, Ryan Wailidge wants to transfer, I don't think he should have to sit out a season. Obviously, it's late; it's August already, but that's just an example. Blocking transfers, I've never really liked because it's college; it's 18 to 20-year-olds that want to improve their futures, whether it be in basketball or in academics, and they're there because they want to improve their future just like anyone else that goes to college. So I think it's weird. I don't like the whole blocking transfers thing. I understand why it exists, but I'm pretty open to transfers and how it's impacting college basketball right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, if they get a freebie that's not a grad transfer, that's fine. But anything beyond that, you need exemptions or normal sitting out rules and stuff. So, because if it's one transfer, it's like you're not going from school to school. So mm-hmm. you're gonna want to at least commit to obviously minimum a year, maybe 2 years. I'm like, okay, it's not for me because player A is coming in, or I'm not new, not even a coaching change. You're just not what they thought. Let them go. It's like, why do you want to keep a guy who's not there? And so that's what my thought is. Like, but then again, you can't, once you're at your new school B, you can't get up and go again in a year just because. Or there's an example, real quick, we'll finish here. A USC quarterback a couple years ago, 5-star blue chip guy. I don't even think he enrolled early in January like some guys do. He decided to transfer like not even a full week into fall camp as a freshman. It's like, What are you doing? It's like, it's stuff like that where I'm not going to play. It's like, there's some people blame, oh, you're afraid of the competition and whatnot. It's maybe not, but I think if you could have one transfer that's a freebie, essentially, why not? I think it's fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I guess the only thing I don't like about all the transfers is when players do it just so they try to get the easy way out, or you might have more competition if a UNLV center this year wants to transfer because Brandon McCoy comes in. I don't know about that because I think you should earn your keep. But as far as coaching changes go and blocking transfers, I think that's all pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I'm like, it's whatever. If you're on the schedule next year or conference, I'm like, that's okay. But even then, I'm like, just let them go. You don't want to be there. Just let them go. But that's our soapbox topic, I guess, for today. But officially wrapping up the show, check out you at Debetker_Eli, Jeremy Moss for myself, collegefootballnews.com. Obviously football news, basketball. We have a lot of basketball guys too. We got a couple of San Diego State guys coming in doing hoops. Obviously our UNLV guys doing good stuff. So keep on the lookout for that type of stuff. And we will check out our next basketball show. What are we, August? What are we right now? August 5th at the moment, right? Is that today's date?
Yes, I think so.
Look for a new basketball show probably in about a month. And in the meantime, yes, we're always biased against your team.